We thought we'd start with the present time.
Present tense? Mm-hmm.
Present time, yes, mm-hmm. Present tense. And ask you, what do the archives and the fact of keeping the archives, the Peshawar archives, mean to you?
The keeping of the archives in Peshawar, for me, is a very much a part of the legacy that we leave behind us. Mm. Partly the record of the struggles of the early days, mm-hmm. As well as a reference for the future, in the event that there is any kind of contention about how things happened, mm-hmm. why they may have happened, mm-hmm. what they were in the past, what they were struggling with. Mm-hmm. So that it's possible that I always have this whimsical hope, mm-hmm. that future generations won't feel the need to keep reinventing the same wheel that past generations have invented. Mm-hmm. And that somehow there's a continuity possible. Because trustees, bless them, they come and go. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there hasn't always been a passing on of the learned wisdom from one generation of trustees to the next. But this is not just true of the Peshawar Trust, but it's true of the Salisbury Trust as well. Mm-hmm. And I suspect most every other trust that hasn't put in place some resource that allows people to learn from the past.
Wow. Yeah. Now that's interesting. Yes. I'm going to interrupt now with a totally different question. But thinking about the induction of new trustees, so are you suggesting that they should have some way of actually acquainting themselves with the past? Or how could that happen?
I think it's possible that at some point somebody might devote an amount of time to creating a sort of a synopsis of the history. Not necessarily a detailed history, but a synopsis of the history, mm-hmm. with the principal points, the principal times, perhaps the principal mistakes, and the principal successes.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
So that they can be easily looked at and give a new trustee a sense of it, not necessarily a detailed knowledge, but a sense of how things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go, because I found that working on the trustee on the archives, discovering things that happened that seemed to go wrong or awry, shall we say, and somehow there was a sort of clawing back of a sort of default position, but it took time, and there wasn't always a clear sense of how to go about things to avoid the past.
You mean learning from the past?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a very interesting answer, Shamsuddin. Linked to that, what inspired you to become the archivist, the first archivist of the Peshawar Trust?
The inspiration was really was there really because of being aware that nobody else was doing it, and that there was a strong feeling in me that it needed to happen, and that if I felt that strongly, I would offer to do it. Mm-hmm. And I might not do it forever, but I could at least start it and begin the process.
Yeah, great, thank you. Okay, so now going way back to the beginning, because that's really where you have experience that an awful lot of people don't have from the very early days. What can you tell us about how Swire Farm became Bishara and became the first Bishara Centre?
It is a matter lost in the mists of time, how it all began. Mm-hmm. But it really came out of a changing in consciousness in the late 60s and early 70s. Mm. And it happened at that time that certain people were gathered together from a greatly disparate set of backgrounds. Mm. People who didn't know each other, and some people who did know each other. Mm-hmm. There were a number of healers who were all familiar at a healing professional level with each other. Mm-hmm. And who had a sense that there was something possible at that time, mm-hmm. which was due to this waking up, mm-hmm. In certain parts of life. Mm-hmm. That gathering together at first was around Reshard Field, or Tim Field, mm-hmm. as he originally was. Mm-hmm. And Tim had access to a lot of very interesting people. Mm-hmm. We're speaking now of 1967 and 68, mm-hmm. 69. And he was well acquainted with a lot of people involved in what were thought of at the time quite eccentric healing and models, mm-hmm. like radiesthetic healing, hand healing, spiritual healing. There was dowsing. Mm-hmm. There were what's the other one? The one with the black boxes.
Radionics.
Mm-hmm. There were a lot of these models of healing practice, mm-hmm. that were happening around the country, but didn't really know about each other. There wasn't any connection between them, and they were brought together through Tim Field, who, when he was still working as a healer, principally as a healer, and some of them were, you know, quite elderly from generations past. Mm. The lovely Rosemary Russell, mm. who was a remarkable healer. Mm. Ruth West, mm. who was another very powerful and remarkable healer. Mm-hmm. One of the other first, two of the other first trustees, mm. Heather Salmon, mm. and Anne McCauley, mm-hmm. both very powerful healers in their own right.
Really.
And so Reshard had rather gathered together through his social contacts with, mm-hmm. all these people. And I think Peter Dewey also, although he didn't so much overtly practice as a therapist, he worked within the Anglican Church, mm-hmm. and had an effect in the church as a priest. And all of these people, myself included, because I was given to understand that I had some kind of healing ability, mm. When I went to Samyuling, mm. in 1968. Mm. And then we were all gathered together in London, mm. and there was a sort of consensus that the healing groups and meditation groups in London were all very well, but what we needed was some sort of residential therapeutic centre in the countryside. Mm-hmm. And so all of these really, I suppose it would say, independently wealthy, but at the same time conscientious and human and deeply compassionate and humanitarian practitioners agreed that they should look for a place in the countryside, out of London.
Was there any particular spiritual affiliation amongst this disparate group of people?
At first, I don't think so, no. At first, no, and subsequently also, not necessarily. Reshard, though, had... Tim, rather, had become Reshard. I met Tim at Samueling in 1968. And then by the time I went down to London and met him in London, he had become Reshard. As a result of having met Pir Vilayat Khan, who was the who was a Sufi master and the son of a Sufi saint, a North Indian Sufi saint. And Reshard had become acquainted with him to the point where Pir Vilayat had in fact initiated him into the Chisti Sufi order and had made him a sheikh in that order. So Reshard had begun to introduce the Sufi, the North Indian Sufi tradition in terms of study and practice as his spiritual work and shared that with a lot of people.
So was that something that he shared with other people at Swar Farm, or did it become the prevalent culture, or was it not like that, or and how were the other trustees with that?
The other trustees were quite happy with it. They had nothing alternative to offer. And it and Pir Vilayat was a very inspiring teacher. And his father, Hazrat Khan, had written many books on many spiritual topics and was a great inspiration to everyone. He had brought into the West the a new Sufi order, which he created, the Sufi order in the West. And this was devoted to the unity of being and the universality of religion. He wrote a book called, I think it was called The Sufi Bible, or maybe that was what we called it. But it had examples of texts from each of the six main world religions that one could study. He Pir Vilayat also introduced us to Zikr. So Reshard and Pir Vilayat established already while we were still in London this connection with a living spiritual tradition, which was quite new to us all.
So how how did Bishara come out of that?
Bishara came out of that connection with the Sufi order and Hazrat Khan after the first trustees had dug deep into their own pockets and bought Swire Farm. And for that first year in 1971, when Swire Farm was was first purchased, I think it was on the... I think contracts were signed on the... exchanged on the 4th of July in that year. And then a lot of people connected with Pir Vilayat and the Sufi order passed through Swire Farm after attending Pir Vilayat's camp, summer camp, in the mountains at Chamonix. Reshard had also gone and attended that. And he came to Swire after the summer camp in the Chamonix. He was still effectively living in Edinburgh, living in London, because what was going to be his home ultimately were a couple of cottages at the gate of the farm that needed a lot of work to make them habitable and according to his taste.
So was it understood that he was like the leader of this farm?
Yes. Well, he was the sheikh.
Oh, he was the sheikh.
He was quite definitely... Pir Vilayat had made him a sheikh.
Okay.
And he was known as Sheikh Rashad.
Okay.
And so we were all very much in awe of that rank and title.
Yeah.
We weren't necessarily in awe of him, but
yeah,
we were certainly in awe of the rank and title.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was all very new to us.
Yeah.
And that sort of persisted through to the autumn of 71. And in the autumn of 71, the people who had put up the money to buy Swire wanted to constitute themselves as a charitable trust,
mm-hmm,
and place Swire Farm under that legal status.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why it became Bishara was because when the trustees-to-be wanted to know what to call this trust,
mm-hmm,
nobody had really the right idea. At that time, Rashad was still very much, definitely part of Pir Vilayat's Sufi tradition.
Mm-hmm.
But he was also interested in this new person that had come into his life,
mm-hmm,
Ali Bulent Rauf.
Mm-hmm.
He was much taken by Bulent, wanting to align himself with whatever it was that Bulent represented, that Rashad couldn't quite grasp.
Mm-hmm.
I think because Bulent was keeping a lot in reserve.
Mm-hmm.
There is tradition around how they met, and I don't know if this is the time to rehearse that, but they had met in London, when Bulent was looking after an antique shop belonging to a friend of Rashad's.
Is that Chris Clark?
No, somebody else, I think.
Okay.
Mm. Chris Clark's antique shop was in Stow-on-the-Wold.
That's right, yeah.
And Rashad had gone into that particular London antique shop looking for his friend and met this Turkish gentleman. And... as they were, something ignited between them,
yeah.
And so Rashad decided that, in fact, this was a direction that he needed to go, to study with Bulent.
Mm-hmm.
But Bulent was very clear for Rashad that he couldn't have two masters.
Mm-hmm.
That if Rashad wished to study with himself, Bulent, then he must, in all honesty, have the integrity,
mm-hmm,
to disengage himself from Pir Vilayat.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that they were offering a different truth.
Mm-hmm.
It was simply that theirs was a different tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So Rashad had to
choose.
He had to make a choice. And he chose Bulent.
Mm-hmm.
He chose to go with Bulent.
Mm-hmm.
Which not everybody was agreeable to, because a lot of people were at that time very much Pir Vilayat,
yeah,
students.
Mm-hmm.
And... but Rashad made that choice. So when the people who had put up the money decided they wanted to have a charitable trust, and give the work a name, they nominated Rashad to go and ask Bulent to consult as to the right name to be given to this new venture. Mm-hmm. Which Reshard did, and Bulent, as many know, agreed to consult and consulted 7 times in the course of a single night. And each time he consulted, the answer was always the same. It was Beshara, mm-hmm. that the name was Beshara. Mm-hmm. So Reshard came back to the prospective trustees and they adopted the name Beshara, mm-hmm. and Swire Farm became the property of the new Beshara Trust.
And what was the understanding of the meaning of the name Beshara?
Well, that's a difficult one. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, Bulent had said to us, it means both an omen of joy, mm-hmm. and also a New Testament,
oh. mm-hmm.
a message. Mm-hmm. And that was the meaning we would. Take from it, mm-hmm. at that time, mm-hmm. And that it was to be something that was not necessarily going to be applicable or relevant in our own lifetime, mm-hmm. but maybe in the lifetime of our children's children, mm-hmm. and that there was about it the aspect that it was to be an esoteric platform, mm-hmm. for the second coming of Christ.
Okay.
Mm. But that we shouldn't expect to see it,
okay.
in our lifetime. Mm-hmm. So that was what we were given at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And what difference did it make to what happened at Swire Farm when the name Beshara was given and it became the Beshara Trust? To the programme at Swire Farm, or what was happening at Swire Farm?
There was a long transition period. Yeah. Nothing dramatic, mm-hmm. Seemed to happen, except that we stopped studying Hazrat Inayat Khan. Mm-hmm. We stopped doing the Sufi order zikr. Mm-hmm. And we stopped looking to Pir Vilayat as the source of our inspiration.
Mm-hmm. When you say we, who do you mean?
We meaning the majority of the people who were associating with Swire at that time, mm-hmm. who had come there principally because of their connection with Pir Vilayat.
So. That must have been quite a shift for them did they know Bulent independently, or it must have been quite a delicate situation for Bulent equally, a place that had been bought by another group of people that he had then subsequently become involved with.
Right. Well, it's true, it was quite traumatic for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. A lot of people couldn't understand what was going on. And they had to make a choice, mm-hmm. as Reshard had been told. Mm-hmm. You have to make a choice. Other people realized that they also would have to make a choice, and choose between what they had gradually become familiar with, that is the Sufi, mm-hmm. order in the West and Pir Vilayat. And move to something that was now called Beshara, mm-hmm. that nobody had in the least idea what it was. It had a name, but it had no form.
Yeah.
You know, it was at that stage in the Buddhist Wheel of Life, which is Nama Rupa, name and form.
Yeah.
But it had name, but no form. And a lot of us were feeling really adrift. Mm. Really adrift. But some people left, and others stayed, and more came, as we began to be able to give shape to something new. So from the Chisti Sufi zikrs, we began to do the Turkish zikrs.
And did Bülent come to Swire Farm?
Bülent came to Swire Farm, and he would attend zikrs. He would never lead them as such, but he would sit and be present for them. Whereas Reshard, and he would instruct Reshard in how to what's the word? Offer a particular zikr. So we were all beginning. We were familiar with zikr, but we were being introduced to quite different zikr. Pir Vilayet's zikr, form of zikr, was very much a sung zikr, coming out of his father being a musician. And having established a very musical zikr. They were sung rather than chanted. And this was quite a surprise to us. Whereas the sung zikr were very light, musical, beautiful. The zikr that was beginning to be introduced was much sort of more somber and earnest and chanted rather than sung. And after November, when the trust got its name and became legally the Bishara Trust, Bülent suggested that the place be closed down, and everybody asked to leave. Except for a small group of people to maintain it, so that the new trustees could reopen it in the new year.
What are the new trustees associated?
Well, these are the people who bought it.
So they're the same trustees.
They're the same people.
Same people
who became trustees.
Who became trustees?
They became
the
new trustees.
Okay, I understand.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that they could reopen it. In a fresh and new way in the following year, 1972. And that was agreed, and we had the first Christmas and New Year there by invitation. So people were invited to attend. We had that New Year's Eve of 1971, we had the first of the Bishara reviews.
As in,
like your husband does.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Oh, absolutely.
So you had fun.
We had a great deal of fun.
Imina sang her way once when Shiavi was staying with us. She sang her way through half the review.
Yes, I know.
It was very witty.
Well, she and I did a sister's act.
Oh, really?
I put on a Chinese robe, stuffed some balloons up my front.
Yeah.
And we sang A Diamond Body in His Briefcase Pocket. Which was a send-up of Reshard. Because he was very much into the esoterics of healing. And there's a photograph of Emina and I on Facebook.
Really?
On the site on the Swire Farm of me looking like I called myself Shamsi O'Shea and Emina after Tessie O'Shea, the big American singer. And you can see from the expression on our faces, we are having a great time.
Great.
Yes.
So, and was it after, you say that it sounds as though, you say that Bishara came as a name as yet with some understanding of what it portended, but as yet, you know, unformed how it would evolve.
Yes.
Was that evolution something that came through Bülent, or was it something that everybody was involved, or other people were also involved, and what forms came up?
It very much came through Boulent. It came through Boulent via Rechard. Boulent was always in the background.
Mm-hmm.
He was always the place of consultation.
Mm-hmm.
Rechard was to be the public face of this new thing.
Mm-hmm.
The private face of it at the time was supposed to be Heather Salmon.
Mm-hmm.
Heather Boulent had chosen Heather Salmon because he had expected that Rechard and Heather were going to marry.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he was somewhat insisting on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that they could anchor whatever was coming, trying to come into being.
Mm-hmm.
And Heather was then very powerful as a conduit of healing and energy. Mm. Unfortunately, she pulled out.
Mm.
She left her money in the trust for quite a while until it became more stable.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the problem that followed. That was the problem of Rechard wanting, because he was still effectively holding the rank of sheikh, even though he had left the order of which he was a sheikh.
Yeah.
He was still much attached to that.
Mm-hmm.
The rank of sheikh.
Mm-hmm.
And Boulent, at a particular point, made it absolutely clear to him that within this new forming something that was called Bishara, there would be no place for teachers and sheikhs and gurus. And that he gave Rechard the choice to give up calling himself a sheikh, or to continue to call himself a sheikh and go elsewhere with it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he chose the latter.
And Rechard chose the latter.
Yeah.
He chose to go to America.
Yeah.
Where he could continue as a sheikh.
Yeah.
And develop a following.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, did anybody come to take? Who took Rechard the place that Rechard had fulfilled in Swar Farm? I mean, I don't mean that necessarily as a teacher, but as the head of Bishara or something like that. Was there such a thing?
What happened was that there were, I think, three or four of us who were, if you look at it from the point of a pyramid, you had Boulent, who gave Rechard the education in what was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And then around Rechard there was Sadiqa, Hugh Tolomash, and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a sort of an understanding that the three of us would carry on where Rechard left off.
I see.
But unfortunately it didn't work like that. Because Sadiqa, who had been Rechard's partner after Heather Salmon left, she didn't want to continue. I felt I couldn't continue in that situation. So I came up to Edinburgh, to what was then the Edinburgh Bishara Centre, to work there.
Mm-hmm.
And that left Hugh Tolomash.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So Hugh really became the sort of de facto principal person under Boulent's education.
Okay, so just... We've talked a long time. There's just one other little aspect that we'd like to ask you about just now. And that is moving to where you've just mentioned, which is what's happening in Scotland. So already by this time, shortly after the Bishara Trust was established in Swar Farm, there was already an Edinburgh Bishara Centre. How did that happen?
No, there wasn't already at that time. The Edinburgh Bishara Centre came out of Swar Farm.
Yeah.
But not until some time later.
Yeah.
The Edinburgh, what happened was that a number of the trustees and the people who were supporting Swire Farm lived in Scotland.
Mm. Oh, really? Mm.
And Macaulay, who was a trustee, Ludi and Bill Howe, who, although they subsequently became trustees of the Salisbury Centre. And Fiona Fraser. They all came from Scotland. And there were a number of people who came from Edinburgh who were at university, who connected through the Peer Vilayet connection, and connected with Rashard and visited Swire Farm. And decided that they together, the Edinburgh-based grown-ups, as it were, and the students at the university who were part of the Sufi group, they decided that they needed something like Swire in Edinburgh. And so the grown-ups, Ludi and Bill and Fiona and Anne and the others and Winifred Rushforth put up their own money to buy number 2 Salisbury Road. And that was achieved in 1972.
Okay.
And that was intended to be opened to the public on 1st of January 1973.
Oh, really?
What happened prior to that is that in the October of 72, rather, there was a big zikr at Swire Farm on the Night of Power. And a lot of the people from connected with the Edinburgh place came down for that. And it was a phenomenal thing. This was extraordinary. It was, I don't know, words fail one as to it. It was undeniably the second most powerful zikr I have ever been to, and the first most powerful zikr I've ever been to was the Mevlana zikr in Konya. In 1993, but I don't, and it's not a matter of there being degrees of powerfulness. It was just that. Sorry, I've got that the wrong way around. I had been to other zikrs, but this was this Night of Power zikr was the most powerful I had been to at that time. And then I subsequently attended the zikr in Konya. And that was of equal powerfulness and equally impressive. That's what I meant to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I think for all of us, it just blew us away. And there were quite a... Bulent and Angela were there. Ludi and Bill were there. Trustees from the Salisbury Centre and Swire Farm were there. Rosemary Russell was there. There were a lot of healers there. A lot of healers. There were... Peter Dewey was there. J.G. Bennett and Elizabeth were there. There was... It was a power bazooka. It really was.
And so that must have had a... an impact on the people from Scotland.
It very much did. It very much did. because they had already, the Salisbury Centre trustees had already bought the premises and were already constituted as the Salisbury Centre, Salisbury Trust.
Mm-hmm.
They already had the building to be a little urban version of Swire Farm.
Mm. As it was under Rashad, or as it was becoming?
As it was becoming.
As it was becoming.
Yes. It was all in a state of flux.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a lack of real solidity about it.
Mm.
But I think it's true to say that people were very much following their hearts rather than their intellects in this.
Mm-hmm.
Because intellectually there was no sense in it at all.
Mm.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And after that zikr, there was the people from Edinburgh. They took an 8-day candle, they lit it from the candle that was sitting in the mihrab,
mm-hmm.
in the barn at Swire.
Mm-hmm.
And they carried that light all the way up to the Salisbury Centre,
mm-hmm.
and nurtured that for several years, for mm-hmm. a number of years, because they felt that it was important, that symbolically they were aligning themselves with what was happening through this strange thing called Bishara.
And did that continue, that alignment?
Yes. That continued, I think, through to 1975.
Okay. That was when the first course happened at Chisholm, wasn't it?
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. And in after 1975, there was a changeover of trustees at the Salisbury Centre. A gradual, not a sudden changeover, but gradually some of the trustees
mm-hmm.
took their money out and retired.
Mm-hmm.
And did other things,
mm-hmm.
and new trustees came in.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point where at about 1977,
mm-hmm.
there was quite a new feeling on the Board of Trustees, and they wanted to, this particular group of trustees were more aligned to Findhorn.
Okay.
And they wanted the Salisbury Centre to become a New Age centre,
okay.
aligned with Findhorn,
mm-hmm.
and not aligned with the sort of esoteric Sufi traditions of the past.
Mm-hmm.
And so they uncoupled it.
Mm.
So during the early years, I mean, when we were talking about how Bishara started to take form, as I understand, because I wasn't there, I did visit at that time, but I went off to Indonesia for 2 years, so I missed this period. But studies started to develop quite
yes.
quickly, didn't it?
It did, yes.
29 pages.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Bulent was very busy generating material for us to study
mm-hmm.
and recommending what would be best for a bunch of innocent numpties to try and grapple with.
Yeah.
I mean, we had been studying Hazrat Inayat Khan,
yeah.
so we were not unfamiliar with
yeah.
a lot of the concepts
mm,
and a lot
yes.
of the sentiment of the
yes.
work, of
yes.
the study.
Yeah.
But Bulent felt that it was important to move the focus of study onto other things.
Yeah.
So that really began in about 19...
So I suppose, along with not having any sheikhs or any teachers, not being part of an order, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he was quite specific about this.
Mm-hmm. And yet, obviously, everything has in this world that appears has to manifest in some form or another.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes. I recall that subsequently, many years later, he admitted that he had thought of aligning Swire to the Mevlevi, to Mevlana at one point, but he had been told that that wasn't appropriate.
Yes. Okay.
So that it must stand alone on its
yes.
own.
Yes.
That it was a new thing
yes.
that had been given to the world.
Yeah.
It was a new testament.
Yes.
a new order of things, and that the order would unfold.
Yeah. Well, that is where we got to in our questions. Is there anything that you wanted to ask? Is there anything else?
I'm just writing this down because that's going to be such a beautiful way to end it. I feel what you just said to unfold. let me think. So, how do you feel about? I say things now, but that's not quite what I mean. I do. So that I know that you said that the archives are sort of to help to learn from the past.
Yeah.
So you can address the future, you know, by not making the same mistakes. Is there anything else that you could say about the archive material that you've gone through? Any sort of impressions that you've received or inspirations or anything like that from the archive material?
That's a good question. And the answer that comes up that immediately is, it was obviously never intended it should be easy.
Fine.
I feel, because in a way I would qualify what I said about the reinventing the wheel. There are certain things that groups of people need to learn together. And that being on a board of trustees is a learning process. It's part of our education. And that, in a way, it doesn't mean that people won't make the same mistakes, but that if they have points of reference that they can look at how things happened in the past, then it's not necessarily the case that they will not have learning experience because it will still be as difficult as they need it to be.
Yes.
Or it is needed for them to have that education in the solving of problems.
But there will be that support in the sense of that it's accessible.
Yes.
The experiences will be accessible.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That in Bishara, because there is no teacher who is the embodiment of the continuity of the knowledge.
Yes.
I mean, also, I'll ask one more question, if I may. I mean, also, what's characterised the last, is it 40 plus years since the time you were talking about here?
45?
Is that some of the esoteric aspect, you know, of religions, and particularly Eastern religions, that where the esoteric was always really much more to the fore through things like the Upanishads, is that some of these ideas seemingly have become much more widespread. So where is Bishara in that? Is that Bishara? Or, you know, what do you make of what's happened in the light of what you were given of to know about Bishara?
When Bishara was first given into the world, we were all profoundly innocent of what might the implications might be. That some of the people who had been gathered together to that purpose were informed about lots of different things. But what none of us were informed about was the real heart of what is esoteric education. And that it's not just about learning by rote. That it's about going through process where I'm reminded of that part of the Lord's Prayer where it says, Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, in earth as it is in heaven. If, as we're given to understand, the kingdom of heaven is within the heart, then if that truth, that will and that truth comes from the heart, the earth that it must manifest in is the human body, which is made of earth.
Yeah.
So that the will, the divine will, is established in the heart, and then that will is done in earth, in the earth of the of the human form, so that there is no disparity. There's no gap. And that that the process of that coming about, of that truth, that message that we glimpsed maybe occasionally, that Bishara represented, that might be the message of Bishara. It just took a lot of time, and a lot of of scattering the seed of it, that some of that seed should find fertile ground in some of the people who were called to it, and that it just takes as long as it takes.
Yeah.
And some people forget, but that there's a necessary aspect to that, so to sowing the seed of the heart of the matter in people's hearts, that is concerned, as we are told over and again. It can't really flourish until we've prepared the place for it. And a lot of the work that we didn't understand or didn't have any reason to apprehend at the time was that work of preparing the place was pretty demanding. You know, love is very demanding. And more demanding sometimes than we really want to entertain. But that it over the days, whilst we had Bulent in our midst, we had in him the living example. And it wasn't that he didn't give us all ample time to learn what we could from him as the living example. And I think, you know, I don't know, I mean, I have no idea how many people, how many hearts it flourishes in. But it's not for me to know. But it does, it has to find a place prepared. And as well as the initial preparing of the place, the fertile soil, and all the weeding that has to go on for decades afterwards. It's not, you know, because otherwise there is a real tendency for weeds to grow up around that. And for us to, for the weeds to be very distracting and pretty.
Well, Shantin, thank you. You talked extremely well. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Let's just see if we can hear any.
Yes, we wouldn't want to go back over it again.
No, we wouldn't.